The Economic Strategy Annual Update was debated in Tynwald this week, with the Chief Minister painting a very rosy Manx economic picture which seemed to avoid discussion of the pitfalls and obstacles to economic success. This led to criticism from some members that perhaps government wasn't living in the real world, or indeed that the Chief Minister was living on a fantasy island. The MHK who coined the fantasy island phrase was Tim Glover. He also joined his southern colleagues in some mini voting rebellions, possibly related to the proposed southern swimming pool closure.
The four southern members and three others attempting to give government a bloody nose by not agreeing to allow the debate to happen because the item was 4 days short of the 6 weeks required to be on the register of business. Is that not just a bit childish on your part?
Not at all. I think it's making a point that the Council of Ministers, and the Chief Minister included, cannot take the backbenchers for granted. There are rules at play. They're quite clear. So if it was really important to get the economic strategy presented to Tynwald a month ahead of the budget, they know what the rules are. There's a mistake on the order paper because it says 6 weeks, but it is 4 weeks, of course, because we changed the standing orders. But it was still outside the 4 weeks.
Well, you described the Chief Minister as talking about a fantasy isle. Do you not understand that the Chief Minister has to talk up the Isle of Man, has to look for the positives? And actually, you know, there is some pretty good stuff in the report that Tynwald received.
And I did say that. I said I admire some of the ambition that is within the strategy that's come forward, but it lacked a lot of detail to my mind. And also to the man on the street, it's meaningless. You know, we've got a lot of people within our society across the island, not just in Arbury, Castletown and Maloo, who are clearly struggling at the moment. And there needs to be a recognition of that, at the very least, that we are going to look to address some of the problems. It's about being transparent. It's about being honest with the people rather than portraying what I termed as Fantasy Island, if that's how it'll look to some of the people that were listening in, who've got these problems.
The Chief Minister has said already on the programme that this report is about the economy and how government is meeting the targets in our island plan. It is not a specific debate about the various social ills that exist in the Isle of Man. It is about the solution to those social ills, which is expanding the economically active population and expanding the tax take and general growth to meet the needs of the island. Do you not see that?
I think that we've got to fundamentally look after the people that we've already got here. And there are major problems with electricity bills, just for example. How do those that are really struggling to find their own home relate to the fact that we're giving vast amounts of money to already wealthy developers to develop these brownfield sites? Now, I know the principle behind it. They've been there for a long time. They are difficult sites to do. But there's no affordable housing provision in it, and a lot of people made that point, not just me. So it's about having balance, and if we can't look after what we've already got in terms of providing dentists, in terms of providing hospital waiting lists that are acceptable, in terms of CAMHS and the mental health services, and getting even a dentist appointment, getting a GP appointment, those are fundamental to attracting people to the island, so the two go hand in hand.
So in terms of the specifics relating to the economic strategy, what would you like to see that the government currently isn't doing?
I'd like to see them just acknowledge that we have got these problems, and that actually addressing some of these problems makes the island a much more attractive proposition to therefore attract more people, attract professionals, etc., that we clearly want and need. The job statistics and vacancies clearly tell us that. But you've got to make the island attractive already with what are fundamental basic services. And that's what I think we're lacking at the moment.
And do you not think that in the presentation and indeed in the report, that's exactly what the Chief Minister was trying to do, was to sell the Isle of Man to make the case for the Isle of Man being that attractive place, and that your Fantasy Isle statement actually drives a coach and horses through all his attempts.
Well, I think that it's demonstrating that we need to also have some reality about the situation. It's about looking after the people we've got. I mentioned, and several constituents have been in touch about, you know, the housing they're in, public sector housing, particularly in Station Park, where they've got mould and leak. These are fundamental issues that we should be addressing and making the island a much more attractive proposition to attract people over as well. So the two, to me, go hand in hand, so I'll stand by what I said.
That was Tim Glover, MHK. So perhaps the Chief Minister was being deluded in his comments?
Listening to your initial sort of introductory remarks to this motion, some people could be forgiven for thinking that you live in a parallel universe, in as much as it was a very glossy and warm presentation, and yet a lot of people are really still struggling, struggling to find places to live, struggling to meet their costs. How would you respond to that?
Well, we've set out, and you know, it's no secret, it is an ambitious economic strategy. It has some very clear high-level targets about growth and why we believe that growth is important. And I should paraphrase that in terms of targeted growth, because a lot of this is about the economic working population and the growth that we believe is required in there. But, you know, for a huge number of reasons, it's not just about finance, but this is about creating the right environment for the island, tackling this vibrancy issue, tackling this brownfield site dilapidation issue, putting in place the right energy infrastructure, for example, for the future. So really this is about building for the future. And actually, I use that word building as a relevant analogy, in the sense that if you drive around the island now, and I'm sure you do plenty of that, Phil, but you know, there is a lot of development going on at the moment, and there is a lot of development planned in the pipeline. For example, we have 740 odd houses with planning permission now to build into the future. We've got these three key brownfield sites in terms of the island infrastructure scheme, and they're going to deliver 90 plus apartments on the island and help to regenerate the town centres. All these schemes will add to a lot of jobs and opportunity for the construction centre. And of course, when you say about tackling some of the problems, you know, one of the ways of tackling problems in society is by ensuring that people have got jobs and they have got opportunities and they have got diversity of opportunities. Now, I'm not going to pretend for a minute that you know, pursuing an ambitious strategy like that does not have problems. I've said before that, you know, politics is a bit like science. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, and there are things that need to be tackled. And when you look at those, one of the critical issues, and you've already sort of just mentioned to me, mentioned it to me before when we were chatting, you know, affordable housing, and honourable members talked about that. You know, we talked about delivering high-level housing figures. I accept some of the criticism that economic strategy did not do enough in terms of the affordable housing. But, you know, for example, I gave very clear example of the new development up in Jerby, 73 new houses, I think 18 of which are affordable houses. And, of course, within that 700-odd figure that is planned, there will be a number of affordable housing. So, you know, I think I take it on board that perhaps we will need some clarification around that. But of course, when you're driving forward an economy and you're pushing forward, there's always the risk that you sort of overheat that economy as well. I think we're conscious of that, but nevertheless want to carry on trying to reach the target that we have set. So, you know, there's a lot for a government to do. I think if you're going to criticise that, that's fine. But I think one needs to then settle back and look at what the alternative for us was, which was to keep the standstill position, not do very, very much, try and tackle all the problems that we've had around, you know, delivery of public services anyway, and tackle, you know, these demographic issues and tackle the vibrancy issues just by sort of sitting still and just waiting for things to happen, which is one strategy. My argument, the argument from this government, from this council, and indeed I think the majority of members of Tynwald, they want things to happen. We should seize the opportunity to build a better, bigger, stronger island, because it will have a number of positive impacts. But of course, you know, it does create headaches, and we've got to put our minds to solving some of those headaches.
One, I mean, there are several points which I'll come to. One of the points that I was looking at, where you have your renewable energy target, and part of that is to reduce, reduce energy waste, but it was actually increase energy efficiency, and it's the same, I suppose, the same thing. 1.1 million has been spent this year, which sounds like, you know, a substantial amount of money, but actually it's around about £27.50 per household. That's hardly going to incentivise the massive change that's required to get what are, in many cases, quite leaky homes converted into much more energy efficient properties.
Yeah, and again, you know, the high level ambition of this government really has been focused around the supply of renewable energy, the securing the future of our electricity supply, because that is our biggest source of emissions if we translate it directly into the emissions agenda. But it's absolutely also necessary because we have a timeline attached to our power station as well. So, you know, our commitment to delivering on that is resolute, I think, at a high level. And the other parts of the sort of climate change agenda, but also I think the social agenda about improving housing are there. I think we've made some solid steps forward. There's always room for improvement, but one also has to balance that out with the construction industry as well, that is really hard pressed at the moment as well to deliver on this. So even if we did have tens of millions of pounds available just to pump into upgrading housing stock for those who sort of qualify for lower paid and less well off families and individuals, you know, is the availability of the individuals going to be there to do it? So it is a question of balance. And, you know, we can't do everything. I think one of the mistakes that governments make is just to try to be all things to all people. And, you know, I think we're focusing on what we believe to be the absolute criticals, the critical targets, the jobs, the businesses, the infrastructure in terms of the energy infrastructure, and of course, the public service infrastructure and the housing infrastructure. And, you know, we need to keep moving forward and improving, you know, our outlook and delivery when it comes to some of those other elements as well.
Tim Glover described your statement as fantasy isle. It is fair to say that, judging on the voting record so far in Tynwald, we're only just past item three when this was being recorded, the Southern members are in the mood to give your government a kicking, most likely in relation to the closure of the Southern swimming pool.
Yeah, I listen. I mean, I think, you know, obviously their tempers are a bit frayed. I mean, but having said that, you know, we are talking about national issues as well. And you know, I remind everybody that they're also national politicians, and they have to think about the greater good. And as I pointed out to Mr. Glover, this is an economic strategy for everybody. This isn't define where they live or who they are. This is a one nation, one government economic strategy. And if it's delivered, it will give everybody the jobs and opportunities they need to improve their lives, but also ensure that, I hope, that this generation will leave behind a stronger, better, more secure island for the next generation to put its mark on when they eventually come through.
More from the Chief Minister after the break. You're listening to Perspective. The Chief Minister is talking about the Economic Strategy Report. So even Rob Mercer had some critical comments, and you know, we don't tend to get that very much from Legco. He said we need to understand and maybe report on obstacles, and perhaps that's where we came in on this interview. Maybe you would have done yourself a few more favours if you'd have said, actually, we recognise that there are still significant problems in the island and they need to be resolved, and this is the way we're going to do it. Perhaps it just felt to many that were listening that you know, this was all positive and everything in the garden's rosy.
Yeah, but bear in mind, I mean, this was very much predicated really on the economy and jobs and business and the need to support some of that with some key initiatives, particularly around housing and obviously the importance of energy, which is not just about the supply of energy, but the nature of the source of that energy as well. So they really do tie in. And I think I did try to make the point to honourable members as well that, you know, the island plan and the government's agenda was quite broad. We were really targeted on the key headlines of this economic strategy. We translated them into the island plan, but that wasn't to say there weren't other documents and groups and reports that were coming through that would tackle some of this in greater analysis. So I think, you know, the other point I wanted to make was you end up with this paralysis by analysis. And I know if you listen to one or two honourable members, particularly sort of people like Chris Thomas, for example, we'll spend all day looking at the facts and figures and not actually get on and deliver the right outcomes. And we're really keen to make sure that. Having said that, you know, clearly, I think it's very important that honourable members, whether Legislative Council or House of Keys, are delivering constructive criticism. And I've always been in that boat and position to say, look, you know, if you want to deliver constructive criticism that includes an indicator towards solutions, then that's a helpful as opposed to an unhelpful position, because, you know, government does not always get it right. And, you know, purpose of having other members is to help provide some direction. But I think if you're delivering solutions as opposed to just to stamping your feet because you haven't got anything else to do or you can't think of any other reason, you just want to provide criticism for criticism's sake, well, then you can expect a reaction back.
Indeed. And one of the helpful interventions, perhaps, was from David Ashford, who was obviously looking to grab a headline, and why not, because it was quite a good one. At the current rate of population growth, he reckoned it was going to be over 37 years before you meet the 100,000 population target that was a target and then wasn't a target.
Well, there's lies, damn lies and statistics, as we all know, Phil. I'll have to go back and reflect what David was actually looking at. But bear in mind, you know, we've set the jobs target. I think he was referring possibly just to the jobs target that was set. But of course, you know, with every job that's created, there's an assumption built in that there may well be additional people coming into the island, and those people could be, you know, wife, partner, and or children. So there has been some assumption built in around, you know, the 5,000 new jobs that we have set out, which of course doesn't add up in entirety to the 15,000 increase in the population. So I think what David was referring to was the jobs number versus the overarching figure. So we don't want to confuse everything. And I appreciate, you know, for the public, there's a lot of facts and figures flying around. I would ask everybody just to concentrate. Really, the 5,000 new employed working contributors on the island is the critical factor. You know, and we believe that around that, because we're driving that target, then we will see a general increase in the population to 100,000. And of course, bear in mind, we're not going to see that in the next 2 years. I mean, that's a 12-year-old strategy now. So, that's the critical element. And of course, we've broken that down to key figures for this administration as well.
One of the other suggestions made by David Ashford was that there may be a difference between artificial growth and what was the other word he used? A natural growth. Mm-hmm. The Treasury Minister riposte, I thought, was very good. As far as departments of government are concerned, they're not that bothered whether it's natural or artificial. It's still money that's coming in. But perhaps David Ashford does have a point. Your natural growth is what you would expect to happen regardless of government action, whereas artificial growth, in his definition, was something that was resulted from actions of government.
Yeah, I take the point that he is making, and absolutely, the way you're describing it, you want this natural growth. If you're going to grow the economy, you want to see that reflected in GDP, but more more realistically, I guess the better, more effective measure for us is in terms of the revenues that government itself is receiving, because if you have more people, you're going to require more money, and you need that money to go in, of course, into public services. How that's directed and prioritised, I think, is actually going to be one of the key challenges for this administration, and I suspect certainly for the next administration. And there's lots of background debates, and I'm sure with the budget only weeks away now, lots of background debates will happen around, you know, where the money is being prioritised and how it is being allocated, which is absolutely fine. But yes, David's point, and I think it's fair enough. You don't want this. You don't want an economy hindered at all by effectively costs, imposed costs to generate government revenue. Really, the large proportion of that wants to be driven by the sort of resultant benefits of the economic strategy.
That was Chief Minister Alf Cannon. Did I get David Ashford's debating points right? Probably not, but who better to explain things than David Ashford himself?
You had a question down about the tax strategy to the Treasury Minister, but you also had some very interesting lines in relation to the economic strategy. And one of those lines was at 100 people a quarter coming into the Isle of Man, we're going to hit the target that then became not a target of 100,000 people in 37 plus years' time.
Yeah, 37 and a half years if the current rate of projection of people coming into the island is realised. So we need to know what we're going to do if we are serious about getting to the 100,000 to actually be able to encourage people into the island. What's actually holding that back and what we can do to unblock that. Otherwise, in 37 and a half years, we might just be getting there with the economic strategy and population growth.
And of course, the target, I think, is it something like 600 a year? No, it must be more than that.
It would work out at more than that, because obviously we're currently around about, depending on where you think it's gone since the census, around about 85,000 people, and you'd be looking to actually try and do what, an extra 15,000 over the next sort of 10 years.
So 1,500 a year, and we're on about 400 according to the figures that the Chief Minister quoted in his opening remarks.
Yes, so it's, as you said, though, it seems to have become a target that's no longer a target, but it was clearly mentioned in the KPMG report. It was clearly referenced as the ambition if we were to try and grow the economy and grow government income and actually get the sort of level of population that will unlock other things. But obviously government has always tried to, in the last couple of updates, so that's not necessarily our target. It's around jobs and growth.
And to be fair, that's what the Chief Minister is focused on, and certainly that's what he was saying to me. A target of a number of people coming in is largely irrelevant. If one of those people happens to be a multi-billionaire who's paying huge amounts of tax, then that possibly meets the tax strategy, and perhaps again some of the questioning that went on during that debate was actually asking, I suppose, or probing the Chief Minister as to how these targets actually deliver what we really need, which is a greater prosperity for the island.
Yes, because again, if we use that population target, of course, what's very important is the mix of people you're encouraging in. In an ideal world, if you are going to encourage more people into the island, what you want is young families who are earning and delivering in the economy. What you don't want at the other end, as dreadful as it sounds, is a load of retired people coming in, because that won't give you the right economic balance, and it will also be potentially a drain on services. So it's not just about the number, it's also about the mix and variety. But that's the same with jobs as well. So for instance, new jobs created, what are those jobs? Are they high paid jobs? Are they medium paid jobs? Are they low paid jobs? And with new jobs, what's the definition of new? The example I used was, if you had a company that restructured, abolished 20 roles and created 12 new ones, is that 12 new jobs created, even although there's a net deficit of 8? So I think what matters is the definitions, and the Chief Minister has offered to go away and clarify the definitions, again, around the number of people who are classed as employed as well. So we've got greater clarity.
Chris Thomas mentioned this in relation to planning applications. The Chief Minister quoted something like 740 planning applications. But of course, as you know, as chairman of planning, are you still chair?
No, not anymore.
But as former chair of planning, there can be a number of planning applications which just sit as approved applications and await the most opportune moment for them then to be developed.
In fact, that was something that was actually a bugbear of mine when I was chairman of planning, where you see land that has been zoned for a ridiculous amount of time or actually had planning permission for development, who are coming back to renew the planning permission or renew the zoning. On a couple of occasions as chairman on planning, as on principle, I voted against those applications to renew, because people are sitting on things and just wanting the value out of that planning already being there rather than actually moving forward and developing. So the actual measure for me, and of course I'm chair of the Housing Communities Board now, the actual measure for me is physical structures on the ground and affordable structures, having affordable homes for people. Because again, the measure can't just be the number of houses built, because you could build 1,000 houses, but if they're all 500 grand each, people aren't going to be able to afford them. So what you'd needs to be a measure of is not just the number of homes, it also needs to be the affordability of homes as well.
The Treasury Minister responded to one of your remarks. Perhaps were you being a little churlish, in as much as the objective by 2026 is that we have a 75 million more in terms of tax take, and we're 40 million ahead of budget according to this report. But then you broke that down into, but is it real? Is it growth that's associated with this plan, or would the growth have happened anyway? So I think you described natural growth as growth that would happen anyway, and the artificial growth was things associated with the plan. Is that not just a bit churlish on your behalf? Because ultimately, the money comes in, regardless of how it came in, it's still going to be available to be spent.
No, it's a serious point, because the Treasury Minister got a bit confused, because when he referred in his remarks, he referred to artificial income. Well, I don't think anyone's talking about artificial income. As he rightly said, I don't think any department would want artificial income. They want the real thing. What I referred to was what I term real growth and artificial growth. Now, real growth is you're growing the population, you're growing the economy. So naturally, government's tax take grows as a result. Artificial growth for me is where, say, for instance, we've got the budget next month. If the Treasury Minister was to say, right, well, we're going to up income tax, we're going to shove 2p, 4p on the higher band, that's going to grow government income. But for me, that's an artificial growth, because it's been done by a tax change of government. It's not a natural growth where, because the economy is growing and people's incomes are growing naturally, you're getting more money. So that was the distinction I was trying to make by saying, when government measures that 75 million, are they going to make the distinction? Or could the Treasury Minister just turn around and put taxes up next month and say, right, I've got 75 million in income extra, that's met the target? Because it would do, but it would also impact potentially the economy out there. So I think there does need to be a distinction. And personally, I would have rather seen them actually saying that 75 million from natural growth due to our base expanding.
But halfway through the period for which this 75 million increase in tax take is the target, it being 40 million up on budget halfway through, that must be a positive.
I think it is. And you know, I opened my remarks. I wasn't as negative as some members were in the chamber. I opened them up by saying there's an awful lot in there to be credited. And I think as members, we all want the economic strategy to work. It's in the advantage of the island. So we can all be critical of certain points, but there is positives in there. If we can get the brownfield sites developed, if we can get those sites that particularly around Douglas have been lying vacant for far too many decades, then, you know, that is going to be a bonus. So we all need to make sure that the economic strategy works. But what we need to ensure is that it works in the right way. But by no means was this a dire tale of woe. There was some very good points in there in the update. And we want to actually be able to drive forward the positives and ensure that it's done in the right way.
Rob Mercer suggested that one of the problems with the way this a very positive statement was made opening the debate by the Chief Minister is actually, those of us who actually live in the Isle of Man know that there's quite a few obstacles to government's ambition, and perhaps some of those obstacles should be described in greater detail in these reports.
Yeah, I mean, there is an awful lot of obstacles potentially to the economic strategy. There's lots of things to work through. It's a very ambitious document, and of course it sets alarm bells ringing as soon as anyone uses the words government and ambition in the same sentence. They don't necessarily always go together, but it is something we need to do, because if we are going to secure the future of our island, then we do need to actually ensure that the economy is growing, that the prosperity of the people of the island are growing, and there is a disparity at the moment. There are people out there who are using food banks. There are people out there who are struggling. I mentioned businesses I have spoken to, and that was one of the things that was missing for me, was about the health of the economy, the health of the businesses out there. And I thought, unfortunately, the Treasury Minister's response of, oh, it's natural churn and it's sad when businesses close but new ones spring up. With all due respect to the Treasury Minister, in some sectors like retail and hospitality, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing these new businesses replacing the ones that are disappearing. And it will be very, very interesting when the next set of figures come out around the share of the economy of different sectors to see where there's been any changes. So I think business health was very much missing from it, because I've been speaking to businesses who are saying this month is make or break for them. They don't know how they're going to get through. They're pumping their own money in. They've got VAT arrears potentially. They've got, you know, issues with increasing wage bills and also increasing employer NI. And they're really struggling. And it's important the government listens to them. So while a strategy of the economic strategy, it's very tempting to focus on everything that's shiny and new and say, look at the new jobs, look at the new businesses, we need to look at the existing jobs and existing businesses as well, because they're the bedrock of our economy. They're what actually underpins everything.
And finally, I mean, you asked a question about the tax strategy. I mean, the Treasury Minister was reasonably clear in his statement in December, in which he said, actually, the tax strategy is going to be published in February and it'll be debated in March. Why did you need to ask a question?
Because for me, that isn't a tax strategy, that's tax policy. That is actually setting the direction of travel. And I've got to say, I was a bit concerned about the answers today, because the way I've always envisaged the tax strategy is the serious decisions to be made by this administration. And we need to go out to the general public and be honest with them and say, if you want a level of services that's up in the skies, then there's a cost to that. And we've, for 20 years, this has been being avoided, where we think we can have low taxation and high level of services. The two don't match. And we need to go out and see what it is the public genuinely want, have those proper open conversations. From the sounds of what's going to happen is, the direction of travel is going to be published with the budget. There's going to be a debate in Tynwald Court where it is important we as elected representatives have our say. But then afterwards, we're going to go out on various different themes and talk to the public. That's not fully engaging. That's not having, you know, full engagement from different areas of the public to, for them to say, well, actually, we don't mind paying for that, or why on earth are we paying for that? It's not gauging proper. It's doing it after the fact. It's the wrong way round for me. It's a bit like telling you who's won the horse race before the horses have even set off, and then let them run and see what happens.
A common approach from some departments of government, but the Treasury Minister seemed to be suggesting that, as far as he was concerned, you know, the last tax strategy to come to light was back in 2012. So this was just a bit of dusting down and tinkering around at the edges.
Well, that concerns me as well. I think it was 2015, the last tax strategy, if I remember rightly. And if I also remember rightly, it went out as a government consultation. So when I talk about consultation, I'm not talking about something that goes on the hub and gets the usual responses from a small number of people. I think that strategy got about 130, 140. I'll have to go back and check, but I think it was about that number. That's not representative. I'm talking about actually going out and engaging with the community, holding public meetings. As much as sometimes that might seem like a bore and not important, I think, you know, going out and actually consulting people properly is the way to do this, because the tax strategy is going to be key to the economic strategy and also to how we pay for services going forward that will actually drive forward our island. So if this isn't right and this isn't agreed on by the Manx public and we're not taking them with us, then to be honest, I think we're setting ourselves up for a big fall.
One of the But the obvious concerns that any Treasury Minister, or indeed any Minister in the Isle of Man government, will have is we compete in a world primarily related to finance and tax rates, particularly headline rates such as income tax. Really, really important. VAT, well, that's something that's governed by the general agreement with the UK. There are other taxes, various charges on various things. One area that does seem to be overlooked frequently is local taxation.
It is. Rates is always the thing that dare not speak its name. How many times have we heard the words rate reform over so many different administrations? In fact, I've lost track now as to even where it's up to in this administration, but it all seems to have gone quiet again. It raises heads every so often, but any tax strategy surely has to look at all tax. So it needs to look at indirect taxation as well, because one, I'll give you an advanced snippet, Phil, there's going to be a question coming from me around indirect taxation as well and the level that's imposed on people, because that all needs to factor in. It's not just about income tax, it's not just about national insurance, it's about the whole piece of it and what the burden that people are bearing in our community.
That was Douglas North MHK David Ashford. As the tax strategy was mentioned, finally we hear from Treasury Minister Alex Allanson. We'll get to the tax strategy later, but first he faced a number of questions about the steam packet.
When the Isle of Man government bought the steam packet, bought a private company, they became the sole shareholder of that, and that lies with the Treasury and basically with me. Now, shareholders of companies should be absolutely key in terms of the accountability of the board, and that they have to provide what the shareholder wants. And when the company was bought into public ownership, there were stipulations there about continuing to make a profit, but also making absolutely certain that the running of the steam packet company was in the best interest of the Isle of Man economy and the Isle of Man people. And so that's my role. What I've been asked today, some of it is operational in terms of how much it costs per mile to get to Heysham and Liverpool. And that's been the case previously when we've answered questions about electric cars and the new vessel coming in and some of the stipulations about it. But some of them are more than that in terms of the involvement of government and Treasury in things like industrial disputes, whether I should go in there with a large stick and start banging heads. The answer I gave was no. I absolutely have trust in both the board and also the representatives of the employees, the unions involved, to get down and sit together with Manx Industrial Relations Service, if necessary, and they're involved now, to work out some of these contractual problems. Because what we need to have is that long-term view of the importance and future of the steam packet company, rather than what can sometimes be short-term political opinions in terms of what's the best thing for this week's headlines.
One of the questions related to the removal from the board of one of the directors who had an interest and maybe an expertise in industrial relations, and it has been suggested, certainly to me, by unnamed sources that the removal of that person was because they disagreed fundamentally with the direction that the steam packet was heading in relation to a clear confrontation with the unions and the staff. Are you aware of that?
Again, the day-to-day running of a something as complicated as a steam packet needs to be with the best directors, the best board there to do it. I shouldn't be dealing with some of the technical aspects of this. I was informed in terms of the resignation from the company of various key people. I'm told that, but often that's after it's happened rather than being involved in the hiring and ongoing employment of various key staff members, because that's a technical job. And really what we were talking about today was how the board is appointed, what skill set they need to run a very complicated logistics company, which is very, very important for our island. And I'm very keen that that should be done by the right people with the right skills, rather than necessarily politicians coming in. If there is a need for political involvement, I won't shy from it. But what we really need is that ongoing technical expertise to run the company in the best way and for the benefit of our local economy, but also our people.
People in the run-up to Christmas could have been forgiven for thinking that the whole way in which the steam packet was being run, and particularly as well, I think, the island's reliance on the steam packet now for many of its staple food supplies, was just not working, because we seem to have had over the course of the last month several times when supermarket shelves were, I think I would go as far as to say, dangerously empty. Is government concerned about this in any way?
So the answer is yes. I would challenge some of the reporting of empty shelves. I've seen that endlessly on the Isle of Man because of the supply chain. So we know that some of the retailers here work on a day-by-day basis. Others, particularly Robinson's, have got large stores of food. So if your delivery that morning doesn't turn up, your shelves are going to be bare. You're running on that sort of supply chain. But we know that we have decent supplies of local produce and also stores of food in cases like this. So although the shelves may be empty in the morning, often they're restocked by the afternoon. Food security is extremely important for government, and the Minister for the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture has talked about this. And food security isn't just growing your own, it's that getting rid of that reliance of imported food all the time, making sure that we support local producers and our local agricultural industry, but also make sure that those retailers we have on the Isle of Man have got that right resilience of their service. And I think going forward, you know, when you say the run-up to Christmas, that was to do with bad weather. Yes, there were silting issues as well, but they didn't just affect us, they affected the UK. And there were some shortages there, very short-term in terms of their supplies. We need to make sure that as a small island, we are more self-reliant, whether that's food, whether that's energy, whether that's a whole range of things. Because the external forces around us, whether they be political or weather-wise, can sometimes work against us.
There was, I'm told, a proposal shortly after Ramsay Bakery closed from one of the other bakers on the island to try, not entirely mirror the whole of Ramsay Bakery's output, but to produce a significant amount of staple bread products. And all that was asked was, as an initial trial, the price for flour would be the same as the price paid that Ramsay Bakery paid. We are told that Treasury was unwilling to back that. Is there any truth in that?
Well, I think when you look at what happened to Ramsay Bakery, that was a personal decision made by the family themselves. That they didn't want to keep that bakery going, which I completely respect. But again, then we had a political impetus that government must step in, government must run a bakery, or government must subsidise another bakery going forward with taxpayers' money to subsidise the loaves of bread. I think we need to be careful when we're stepping into a void. And what government did, quite rightly, was to not jump in, but was to step back, look at the situation. Those people who were worried about empty shelves with no bread coming in, actually there was bread imported. I would argue that people now have much greater choice of bread. And what we've also seen is Robinson's buying up a local bakery and expanding their provision. So when there's a gap in the market there, it will be filled by the market rather than government necessarily stepping in. And again, today we've been debating a whole range of things, like Steam Packet Company, but also the horse trams, a whole range of services that are provided by the Isle of Man government, which then come under criticism that there's not enough investment or that the ferry timetables are wrong. We need to be absolutely clear that the government is running services for the best interest of the people only when it has to, and otherwise we'll rely upon the private sector to do that.
You also had a question to answer in relation to the tax strategy. I think this was from David Ashford, and he's wondering when is the tax strategy going to be published and what public engagement and consultation will take place? Well, I'm fairly sure you told one of my previous programmes that the tax strategy was to be published in February and debated in March.
That's true. I mean, even with the island plan, the tax strategy was meant to come before December Tynwald. I stood up in December Tynwald and said, because it was now very interrelated with the budget, I felt it would be better to be published at the same time as the budget, but actually then have a chance for people to digest it and come back for a fuller debate on the tax strategy in March. The last tax strategy, I think, was 2012. It's a very high-level thing about raising enough money for government spending and how we do that, how we get the balance right. But obviously, lots of the conversations today have been about prioritising government spending. We know that government finances are stretched. We know that we need to put it where it's best fitted, and we can get the best value for money from the taxpayer. We are spending other people's money constantly, and that's how governments work. So I think it's absolutely right that the tax strategy going forward is properly debated. And then if people want to consult on various aspects of it and how it affects normal working people, then we go through that. So I've got no problems with that. Going out with a strategy and asking people yet again what they want in a strategy, I think a lot of people on the Isle of Man are a bit bored of that. They want to see the outcomes of it. They want to actually know what it means for them rather than yet another document that's produced by government which sits on the shelf. And that's what I intend to do when we debate this properly in March and then go forward. And if people want to talk about it, absolutely fine. But it's those outcomes for people and how it affects the money in their pocket.
One of the areas that of taxation on the island that remains incredibly low compared to all the countries that the Isle of Man would be competing with is local taxation, particularly rates. We've had recently it hit in the headlines the fact that the Southern Swimming Pool is going to close because the Department of Education doesn't have enough money. The ratepayers in the north, south, and West pay for their regional pools, but the ratepayers in the East don't pay for their regional pool. Is it not time that we had fairness across the island in relation to specifically that particular rate issue? And will rates form part of your consideration in this new tax strategy?
I think the idea of rates reform, we've been through this over the last two administrations before this one, and various ways and methods have been devised to make it fairer, and then they've fallen because of the divisions often between urban and rural constituencies who because of the system at the moment, there are vested interests there. When we come to the taxation strategy, no, it doesn't actually bring in local authority rates. I think we've talked in Tim Wald numerous times about rates reform and how it should be twinned with local authority reform, because the two do go together, and I think that debate will continue. I think in terms of an all-island leisure rate, that would seem to be the fairest option. You either put it on general taxation and people pay more, or you put it on the rates, which is very much, as you described, a local tax that's meant to there to be providing local services for people, whether that be swimming pools, whether that be parks and other recreation facilities, or refuse collections. But certainly as we go forward with some of the ideas about how we finance local provision of you know, government services, I think rates needs to be part of that, but it's not the whole part, because when you look at the rates paid on the Isle of Man, although significant, they're still significantly less than across, and that burden of expenditure between local government and central government here is very much more towards central government paying for things.
Because, of course, across certainly in the UK, and I think it's the same in the Republic of Ireland as well, local taxation, council tax, rates, whatever they call it, covers quite a lot of things that in the Isle of Man, central government pays for through taxation.
It does, and we've seen the issues with that. There was a big move in the United Kingdom to put things like public health, social care onto local authorities. We're now seeing across the United Kingdom large local authorities going bust and actually becoming completely bankrupt, and then those services being really under threat, really important services. So I think we need to be very careful that any change, any switch of the function of overall government, whether that be central or local, is managed properly, is budgeted properly, and isn't done as a quick fix. And so whilst I welcome things like local government reform and rates reform, I think we need to do it in a very careful way so that we don't jeopardise those services that are really key to our society.
So, who was right? Is the Chief Minister living on a fantasy island, or is he merely doing what Chief Ministers have a duty to do in talking up the island? Should we all have more of a say in the tax strategy, or are such matters best left to the Treasury Minister? Are the four Southern members just playing childish political games, or do they have a point? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting philgorn@manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geisha from Thanks for Listening.